every couple years I do this really silly thing. I'll get bored one night, and then I go and I sign up for a half marathon. I hate running. It's like, and then I'm registered, and they've got like $100 of my dollars, and I've got to run a half marathon, apparently, right? And you can't just, you know, in 3 months I'll go out and I'll run 13 miles. It entails like training, which I hate, but now I have to do it because they have $100 of my dollars, right? And it's like, it's good motivation. I know why I do it-ish, but all the while, it's a lot to get up and train for a half marathon, especially when you don't like running. And so I have to get up and you put your shoes on and you go running. And I like all the benefits that running brings, like feeling healthier, got more energy. I like the sense of accomplishment once you finish a race or finish a run and it's done. But I don't like what it takes to get there. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of endurance that's demanded. And just the fidelity of really showing up. And I'm not the sort of person who's built to go out and run 13 miles. So I've got to go and I've got to do the work day in and day out. And it's easy for me to make excuses. Well, it's too hot outside, so I'm not going to run. Or it's too cold. Or I didn't eat well yesterday. And so it's like, if you start running and training for something, it really demands a lot of you. And I'm sort of a product of my generation because I just like things handed to me, right? It's like, I like instant gratification, right? I don't want to have to work for something. I wish that I had what I wanted, and I wish that I had it right now. And so I wish I could just go out and run 13 miles, but I can't. So I've got to do a little bit of work. I've got to delay the gratification of getting there. And in the moment, I've got to really endure. I've got to buckle down and say, all right, this is my task, and I'm going to set myself to it because it's worthwhile, it's worth doing. But all of us are really products of this generation. We've been born into a land of great prosperity. Like, you can download the Target app, you can download the Amazon app, you can download Grubhub or whatever food thing. It's like, you can have things delivered to you. You don't even have to leave your couch. I mean, they will bring it straight to your house. You worked for it. I mean, you earned the money, I presume, but it's like, how simple, how easy do we have so much of life come to us? And so whether it be fitness or really whether it be our spiritual life, it's a really good testing ground, a really good stretching that needs to happen, because we become what the ancient Greeks would call like small-souled. We're not magnanimous, which is to be great-souled, that we've been stretched in all of the best ways to really show up when we need to show up, to lean in when things get difficult, to stay on the grind, as we say. It's like, I need to stick to what's most meaningful, what's most beautiful, which often tends to be the most difficult things in our lives. And we see in this woman that we meet in today's gospel, the Canaanite woman, a real antidote, a remedy to the culture that we inherit. It's a beautiful life with God that you and I get to endure with him, especially in the moments when he tests us. This woman comes to Jesus in her need, and she calls out, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David, have pity on me." It's an embarrassing thing to be in the midst of a crowd and say, like, "I need help." Because what does everybody do? Everybody's nosy. They turn to you right away. And some people who, like, genuinely can help. You know what it's like on an airplane if somebody, like, passes out? Like, you call all the doctors and nurses, and now everybody's murmuring, like, what's going on? And we all want to know. And this is this woman. She has to call out, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David." And she exposes herself, makes herself vulnerable, not just to Jesus, but to others around her. And that's how much she needs him, that I'm willing to even suffer that. Maybe a little bit of embarrassment, even a little bit of shame. But what's driving her is her love for her daughter. She says, my daughter's tormented by a demon. And after calling out this desperation, this moment of need, Jesus ignores her. But Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. You think, wow, Jesus, you're a really bad customer service rep. Like, okay, like, I need help, and you're not showing up. But I think we treat Jesus like that sometimes as a customer service rep. It's like, I didn't get my food. Where's my food? Like, my internet's not working. What's the deal? You better fix it. Like, we treat Jesus as if he's this divine butler who waits on me hand and foot to do my bidding. That Jesus is just a God of convenience, just to make my life easier, to take away the hard things. But he can't be that. He's so much more than that. And we see it play out in this woman, because as soon as she doesn't get what she wants, the Lord sort of ignores her. There's this fire that's stoked in her, this desire for more. And she doesn't stop pursuing him. It's like a fire there that's burning. You know, a campfire. It's like, it's all the same logs, but as soon as you stoke it a little bit, you move the logs around, it gets bigger. And that's what's happening in her soul. Like, something's stirred up. And so she pursues Jesus and says, she bends down and does him homage. She worships him. She's humbled. She knows her place. It's like, I can't do this on my own, Lord. But only you can. She says, Lord, help me. This is the moment that we come up for Holy Communion. You know, we bow or we genuflect, we kneel to receive Jesus in the Eucharist. There's an homage that's shown to him so that our exterior gesture would move us interiorly. Why we genuflect when we go into the pew? Like, we do these exterior gestures so that something in us moves interiorly, so that my fire is stoked to follow the Lord more closely, to believe in him more firmly. And this dialogue continues, that her desire has now been stoked. She does him homage. And then Jesus says this challenging word to her. I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. In other words, not to you. Because Jesus is in foreign land. She's a non-Jewish woman. She's a Gentile. She worships, in theory, she worships other gods. And Jesus' mission as the promised Messiah was to be to the house of Israel, the chosen people, the people who received the promise, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, their descendants. It's a strange thing that God chose this people to reveal himself to, but he did. And in the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he sends his apostles out to Jews. But at the end of his ministry, Jesus says, go out to all the nations. But so long as Jesus was here on earth, his mission was to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and she was not part of it. But her faith is so great that the Lord moves her, and that he does perform this miracle. He says, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. And the woman's daughter was healed from that hour. There's a real testing that happens to us as we begin to follow the Lord. There's a real testing that's always going to happen. He's not our customer service rep. I mean, it's a real relationship, but still more than that, that the Lord is trying to call something out of us so that we wouldn't just be small-souled, that we would collapse in on ourselves, but that we would become great-souled, that we would seek him in all things. See, what happens to us when we don't receive what we want? We tend to throw a pity party. We become a little discouraged. It's easy for us to give up. This is me training for a half marathon. It's like, I've got all the excuses I don't want to run. But what the Lord is saying, will you follow me? Like, I know you like the benefits of running. I know you like the benefits of being a Christian, of being a Catholic. You want a sense of peace. You want your troubles to go away. You want heaven on earth, ultimately. But that is only comes after the testing, the enduring that you and I must go through. St. Paul tells us in his letter to the Romans, he says, affliction produces endurance, and endurance produces proven character, and proven character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint because of the love of God has been poured out to us through Christ Jesus our Lord. Affliction produces endurance. Endurance produces proven character, and proven character produces hope. And we kind of live in a hopeless world, a world that sees that this is all that there is, and I've got to figure out what to do with it all. So yeah, I'll go to all the worldly things. Yeah, I'll just buy things on Amazon and Target and everything else, and it's like, that's going to be the thing that satisfies me. But there's so much more that the Lord calls us to. And there's going to be a real testing. The Lord's going to ask us, will you come a little bit further? Will you allow me to enkindle your desire? I'm not going to give you what you want right now, but keep coming. And in the midst of it, our soul is stretched. That we come from being this small-souled person to being a great-souled person who's capable of great virtue, great friendship, who's capable of leading others to holiness, to Jesus. What I can do, but because of what the Lord has done in me. G.K. Chesterton once said, and it's brilliant, he says that people give up on Christianity too easily. That the Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and left untried. We find Christianity, following Jesus, to be difficult. And so we just kind of give up. We don't push through an endurance. Affliction comes and we say, well, now it's my turn to take control because I don't have what I want. We take the reins back from the Lord. But we need to give the Lord permission that in the midst of affliction, that we would endure. And in the endurance, there's proven character. Saints are made not in what's easy. Saints are made in what's difficult. In the showing up, in the faithfulness, in the daily grind of Christian life. And it's hard. And there's a real testing. But you and I are called to the heights of heaven. And there has to be hope that exists in our heart for that. There has to be hope that this is not all that there is, but that our hearts would open to whatever the Lord is bringing about in us. And so I am just amazed by this Canaanite woman, that I need something of her robust, pursuing, enduring faith so that I would continue to seek Jesus even in the midst of affliction. That he would look to us as he does to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. But it won't happen on the first time. It's going to happen over days, weeks, months, years that the Lord brings about the best in us. Let it be done for you as you wish. Not because you ask, but because your faith is great. We trust in the one who is faithful to his promise. And we ask that our hope, our faith be stretched so that we too would be great souled.